Minutes to midnight, the hand that threatens you.
Fuck yeah.
2 minutes to midnight to kill the unborn in the womb.
Yow.
Yowza. So good.
Go, Herman. Go, Herman.
Mm-hmm. It is not my birthday.
It's not your birthday.
It is not my birthday. I do not need another birthday. I've had enough birthdays. 40.
Silent Night. Watch out for your terror story.
What's your favorite scary movies?
Welcome to the Darkness Eye Podcast.
Welcome to the Darker Side Podcast, where we delve into the darker side of our existence. The morbid, the macabre, the spooky, and the absurd are all fair game as we discuss
murders,
UFOs,
cryptids,
creepypasta,
and the something something of the something things,
paranormal, and the dark depravity of the human
existence.
Rage Against the Machine was great!
Rainbows.
I am David, and as always, is Forrest, Rachel, and Herman. How is everyone?
Hey question guys.
Mark. Fantastic.
Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month. Yes.
Happy Pride Month. Happy Pride Month.
We're going
month.
To continue the Pride Month. By the way,
I'm proud of all the pride. Honestly, I mean,
thank you.
We should all have pride, and we should all love and accept each other. I mean, at least that's how I feel.
We're all mm-hmm. skeleton and bones.
We are, and we all bleed red, and we all want is love and security, and you know, what are those things in the thing that they did? The Bill of Rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of what?
Of happiness.
Exactly.
The pursuit of happiness.
DUI. DUI.
Penis.
Penis.
I like that.
Oh yeah. All right, guys, we're going to get into Today in History, Darker Side Edition, June 3rd. We're recording this on the 3rd of June. In 1539, Hernando de Soto claims Florida for Spain. And you know what? We all know what happened to Florida since then. It's a bastion for some... I can't believe that shit happens in this world.
So nobody has ever died at Disney World. Look it up.
Nobody?
Nobody, not a
hashtag
soul.
Hashtag cover up.
Nobody has ever died at Disney World. Oh, they can pronounce that at the hospital, but that's Orlando.
Yes.
Orlando, I love you, Orlando, with SeaWorld and Disney.
Nice burp, Forrest.
Excuse me, sorry.
So, John, this one relates to a topic you hit back in a couple episodes ago. In 1608, Samuel de Champlain completes his third voyage to New France at Tadoussac. Yeah, Quebec.
Is that?
Is it? How do you? Tadoussac? I know it's French, so there's some weird.
Some.
Yeah. Tadoussac, Quebec.
I do know that it was the Mi'kmaq Indians and Mi'kmaq Paddywhack. They were great.
And they didn't care to give that dog a bone.
They should have.
Yeah. In 1781, Jack Jouett begins his midnight ride to warn Thomas Jefferson and the Virginia legislature of an impending raid by Buster Tarleton.
Oh, it's the other ride.
The other ride.
The other ride. Mm. Yeah, nobody talks about that one.
No, that's a very, very important ride, actually.
Paul Revere, kid. It was the fucking
dude,
man.
Dude, hey. You know, 2th by 1 and then 3th by something else is what they
one
said.
1th by C, 2th by beers, kid.
Oh my God.
In 1839, in Humen, China, Lin Zexu destroys 1.2 million kilograms of opium confiscated from British merchants, providing Britain with a casus belli, which I actually think means open hostilities in French. I mean, Latin, sorry.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so to open hostilities resulting in the first Opium War. And if you've never read anything about the Opium Wars, check the Opium Wars.
Yeah.
That's some crazy, just like Orchid? We had wars. There are people on this planet that had wars over orchids.
Mm-hmm.
So check out the Opium Wars. If we're going to go into O Wars, the Opium Wars and the Orchid Wars are probably the two coolest O Wars.
And there was a couple O-Face
Wars.
Orchids do look like vaginas.
My God.
Look at it. Look at that.
Yep.
Look like vagina.
Yeah, it looks so like a, accepting.
Look at this. Like the clitoris is right there.
The clitoris.
Yep.
I don't know any of that really.
You can always just do research for us, so at least you know.
Well, I know the parts and everything and how it works.
So in 1940, World War II, the Luftwaffe.
Luftwaffe.
Bombs Paris. We all know about that. That dropping. That was a
that dropping. We all know
that turd
droppings,
box.
Dropping dino droppings.
Yes.
Dino droppings.
1940. Yeah. So the World War II Luftwaffe bombs Paris. That was a horrible bombing. Quite a few people perished. In 1943, you're gonna get a kick out of this, Herman. In Los Angeles, California, white U.S. Navy sailors and Marines clashed with Latino youths in the Zoot Suit Riot.
Throw back a bottle of beer. Yeah. Zoot Suit Riot.
Riot.
Throw a comb through coal black hair.
Yeah, so in 43, we get the term Zoot Suit Riot.
That was the fucking grooviest riot that ever happened.
Yeah, a bunch of Latinos getting destroyed by U.S. Navy soldiers and Marines.
And, you know,
my God.
May God have mercy on them.
Yeah. In 1980, an explosive device is detonated at the Statue of Liberty. The FBI suspects Croatian nationalists.
Croatian nationalists?
Yeah, it's a Baltic country at the tip of the USSR. Right?
I always mix up Croatian with Croatoan.
As totally in, like, as in Roanoke? Yeah. As in Roanoke, yeah.
Look at A, man.
No, is this the reason why we can't go to the tippity-top of the Statue of Liberty anymore, John?
In Chechnya.
I want...
Oh, sorry, it's Croatia.
Yeah,
it is. Also, it was massively unsafe. In 1986, when they redid the Statue of Liberty, they redid the arm,
yep,
thinking that they could get people to go in there, and then realize that in France in the 1800s they weren't quite thinking about modern safety.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's how she was a president from France.
Or is that what the government wants you to think?
I don't know, John. I'm not sure that I don't think I've heard any of that conspiracy. If you want to bring that to the table at some point, that would be interested to hear about.
It's too dark.
too dark for the darker side.
It's too dark.
It's like
it's the bleaker side.
It's not as true. It's not true enough, Herman. It's not true dark. 2013, and this is quite an important one in our freedoms, guys. The trial of United States Army Private Chelsea Manon for leaking classified materials to WikiLeaks begins in Fort Meade, Maryland. Chelsea Manon, do you know who Chelsea Manon is?
Is that the transgendered person?
Yes.
What? Okay. Transgendered?
Yeah, because that was private whatever Manning prior, but Chelsea is the name that she is now living with.
That's awesome.
Chelsea, but I believe.
She basically leaked classified materials to WikiLeaks. Kind of similar to the same type of materials that were, like, they told about how people's rights and freedoms were being, you know, basically just, you know, taken advantage of, and these people were being, you know, all the information that you gave was kind of a like a Snowden type material.
Mm-hmm.
Where
it was right on board with that.
Yeah.
And people have been telling us for years, and we're just accepting it. It's disturbing.
Right. I love Snowden.
Right, and then she
American
she
hero, on, real yeah. American hero.
But a lot of people look at Chelsea in the opposite of that, like as a betrayer, and I do believe that it has to do with her identification
of being a trans person.
Do you know what I mean?
You know, kind of discriminating against, like, and not holding him or her, sorry, Chelsea, in the same light as a Snowden.
Yeah.
When in fact they both did literally the same thing, and
to,
showed
to
us.
To be fair, Snowden has the same problem. I mean, he's sitting there in the middle of fucking Switzerland.
Yeah, Sweden, I think, isn't it? Or one
Sweden,
of them.
Sweden, Iraq, I don't know. But he is not allowed to visit.
No, man. And, you know, look deeper into those guys for sure.
Real American heroes.
All right, guys, we're going to move into the darker side news stories. This episode, two of us are going to be reading them. And one of the first one will be Rachel, and the second will be me. Rachel, what do you got for a news story today?
So, an article recently popped up that I found to be interesting only because of the medical and scientific background of it.
I love that.
So the Cancer Institute finally admits marijuana kills cancer.
Yep.
Fuck yeah.
I believe it.
While this article was published this year, the statement given by the National Cancer Institute was actually released in August of 2015.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, and this is why they're holding on to this information, because they don't want us to know about it. Because the pharmaceutical industry has their fucking hands in everything, mm-hmm. and they don't want you to realize that a natural drug that grows in the earth, mm-hmm. that is completely, like, demonized mm-hmm. in this country, is 100% beneficial in so many different ways, from hemp to cannabis. To
Congress now legalized hemp.
Yeah, it's for money. God, that's for money amazing. Purposes.
Yeah. Even though they still are against marijuana.
Yep.
I mean, to be fair, you can grow a cancer-curing medical drug for free in your backyard,
and you can also build a house out of the bulk stuff that you can't get out of it.
And you can build that house, but I'm gonna be huffing and puffing,
and you can't blow it down.
So high, I'm just gonna be like eating nuggets and shit.
What do you get? Go ahead, Rachel.
So, but the potential benefits for medicinal cannabis for people living with cancer and other chronic illnesses,
mental disabilities,
can include anti-nausea, appetite stimulation, pain relief, and improved sleep. The big question is, so how does cannabis kill cancer? Well, there are 21 chemical components found in marijuana called cannabinoids.
Yep.
And when our entire body, just to let you guys know, has an entire system, you know, we have our nervous system, our endocrine system, we have all those wonderful systems.
Yep.
We are the only creatures that have a cannabinoid system mm-hmm. in our bodies. We have an entire system devoted to processing these chemicals.
So, Dave, are you saying that you have 21 problems, but a cannabinoid ain't one of
them? Something like that, John.
All right. So, but these chemicals activate specific receptors found throughout the body to produce pharmacological effects in the central nervous system and the immune system. This is the physiological and biochemical changes in the body produced by a drug in therapeutic concentration. We all know what THC is. That's the fun stuff that gets you high.
Gets you high.
It's got the psychoactive ingredients, too.
You're make psychoactive. You trip.
So then there's all these other components, too, which include cannabinol, CBN, cannabidiol, CBD, cannabichromine, CBC, cannabigerol, CBG, and tetrahydrocannabivarin.
Wow. I'm very proud of you for attacking all of those.
Yeah, nice, Rachel.
I've never heard them all spoken out that way. I've read them, but never ever heard them.
The CBD part of the medicinal marijuana is known to have significant analgesic and anti-inflammatory activity.
That's awesome.
Without the high that THC produces.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why it's getting more popular. People are feeling
CBD
better. Yep.
They made me feel the best I ever did. And unfortunately, the best cost a lot of money, and you can't get the potency you need for a decent money, because it is such a niche market.
It's a plant.
Right now.
Grow the shit yourself. Make a little bit of cream and just rub it on your nipples.
So during a 2-year study, groups of mice and rats were given various doses of THC by tube feeding.
Fuck yeah.
Tests were also done on a variety of cancerous cells. They have found cannabinoids may reduce tumor growth by causing cell death, blocking cell growth, and blocking the development of blood vessels needed to grow tumors.
Wow.
Lab tests on animals have shown that cannabinoids may be able to kill cancer cells while protecting normal cells. Cannabinoids may protect against inflammation of the colon and may have potential in reducing the risk of colon cancer and possibly its treatment.
Boom.
Boom.
A laboratory study of THC in liver cells showed it damaged or killed the cancer cells. That same study of the THC in models of the liver cancer showed that it had anti-tumor effects. CBD may make chemotherapy more effective.
Hell yeah, I believe
that's a big one.
That would be amazing, though, because like if it could help with the regeneration after chemotherapy, I mean, why wouldn't you want
so
that?
So
I have definitely seen it, though. We got a bad problem with his head.
Yeah.
And homeboy smokes like a fucking genius.
He also,
I'm high right now.
You know, he's feeling good.
I'm stoned to the bone right now.
So high.
But the cool thing, like, if the pharmaceutical company were to go in the medicinal cannabis use, this would be the way to do it. If in combination with a chemo drug, we can fix you.
Yeah, with like a potent enough CBD pill or something that they can do with salve or something and helps with the area.
Chemo's designed to kill cells. Doesn't matter if they're healthy cells, and that's why people get sick.
It's so awful to see people go through
that.
We'll be speaking about the
I saw my
the Luftwaffe of medical treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on it.
So by using cannabinoids while in treatment, you're protecting what healthy cells you have
already. Yeah.
And the chemo's just going to attack
the dead cells,
the cancer cells.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
There was a really cool study. All right, so a men's health study proves that cannabis can potentially kill cancer. In an analysis of 84,000 participants, they looked at the association between cannabis use and occurrence of bladder cancer. Over a 16-year period, they found 89 cannabis users developed bladder cancer, compared with 190 of the men who did not report cannabis use. After dividing the study up by age, race, ethnicity, and body mass index, cannabis use was associated with a 45% reduction in bladder cancer.
That's quite a big number. Wow. I mean, just from usage.
Mm. I mean,
That could be whether you're eating or smoking it, for sure.
I mean, taking all these facts and just think that for just one second, just think to yourself, like, our government is totally going to see this as non-factual.
It's because they won't allow funding for this type of research. And any other research FDA is not accepted by the U.S. government.
Yeah.
So if they won't allow the FDA to do research into cannabis, then how can we expect our government to do anything about it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know.
Exactly.
There are certain portions of America that are causing this. What I was going to say earlier, Rachel, is you were talking about they were doing this to mice, right, with cancer?
Correct.
Yep.
If I was a mouse, I'll tell you what, I would absolutely want to be on those cannabis fucking drug tests. Because I'm going to have that horrible life, you get me motherfucking
just
high,
push the cheese
baby.
Cheese button.
Cannabis.
Crank the Marley cheese button. Cheese button.
Exactly, dude.
I forget.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for that story. And this is actually probably one of the most important discussions that we should have. I mean, we should have the freedom to allow ourselves health benefits substances that we know are healthy to us and not what the government says is healthy for us.
Fuck yeah. And
if they better do some studies then and follow up on that, because we legalize it.
Legalize it. Yeah.
I think
I will advertise it.
I just think it's ironic because, like, you know, our government's so anti, you know, factual with marijuana, but at the same time, they're so anti corporations as well.
Right.
Especially Donald Trump is super anti corporation, and I just think it's hilarious that, like, you know, corporations aren't, especially pharmaceuticals, should be allowing this kind of research, and it's kind of like a weird. It's so weird.
They can't make money if somebody who can grow something in their backyard.
It's such a hypocrisy. It really is.
Oh, absolutely. And John, if there is a massive major corporation that's going to jump on board with the legalization of national, who do you think it's going to be?
Goats eat it, and they love it. Philip fucking Morris,
dude,
man.
They've already got patents.
Packaging. They have. You say go, and they're gonna bounce.
They're gonna make your Marlboro. Greens.
Oh, Marlboro greens. Hell yeah. I smoked the shit out of that.
Filtered, too.
Oh, it filtered that shit.
Yeah, get that cancer shit out of my weed.
Make it smooth.
All right, guys. Well, I got a new story here from Boston 10. I think it's at... Is it NBC or ABC?
NBC?
It's the Peacock.
What's the
Boston NBC. 10, man.
Peacock.
Boston 10 out of NBC.
Go eat
peacock. Nice Katy Perry drop there, Forrest.
So, community shocked after Boston woman finds severed goat's head on hood of her car.
Oh my God, that shit is...
fucking metal. That's like a Satyricon album cover, man.
All right, guys.
Fucking metal, man.
You guys ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
A Hyde Park woman received a terrifying surprise when she went to walk her dog on Tuesday morning. Boston police said they received a report around 6 a.m. from a woman who said she was out walking her dog on Garfield Avenue when she noticed blood and the head of an animal, later identified as a goat, on the hood of her car.
I know exactly where that is.
Yeah, a 48-year-old woman also found a photo of herself. This is the creepy part of this story. Is the 48-year-old woman also found a photo of herself tucked underneath the vehicle's windshield wiper blades. The woman told police she didn't recall taking the picture or the time frame when it might have been taken. So there's a creepy stalker type person, yeah, for sure.
Ooh.
Isis Robles says the victim is her cousin, a mother of four with a young son. Like any other mom, she has a child she has to protect, Robles said. Animal control responded to the scene and removed the dead goat from the woman's vehicle. But Robles says her cousin and family are left with the questions, like, who would do this? She has no idea whatsoever, and she has no enemies, Robles said. Why would someone want to terrify this mother of four? Robles said. They're insane. This is insane. They are so disturbing. People in the neighborhood are also confused and concerned about the gruesome and gory discovery.
Shocked. Very shocked. Where would they even get something like that?
One woman asked.
Someone's probably just trying to mess with someone's mind, you know, to intimidate them.
Tom Flanagan said.
And that's not okay,
a woman added after Flanagan's comments.
It's scary, yeah. It's a scary thing because it could be that person wants to hurt that person,
one woman said from her doorstep.
It would be like someone like either satanic or something like to be threatening, another woman added.
Police are calling this criminal harassment, but the motive is unclear. No arrests have been made. Boston police are asking anyone with information to contact them. The incident remains under investigation.
Holy fuck.
Well, I mean, what I like about the questions, we're like, where would somebody even get something like that? It's a fucking butcher shop. You ever been to a fucking Muslim butcher shop?
Oh, you just go to Jamaica Plain.
You go to JP, you pick up a goat's head.
You
no problem.
Smoke the head until the eyes are just right. No, the cheek meat. Yeah, oh, my God, it just runs
You
down
pop
your
the
beard.
Eyes and then the cheek meat in your mouth.
Oh, the
and it's
fucking
like,
cheek meat.
Don't
but boil it. You down. Boil it. You make a fucking...
You don't boil it. You smoke that all day long. My buddy and I were actually talking about the... we roasted a pig for my wedding, and my buddy and I were talking about that, and he was like, I don't know if it was the cheek meat or the eyeballs that was the best part. It was definitely the cheek meat.
Back when I had, when I was eating meat at your wedding, Herman, one of our friends made me eat the cheek of the pig that you had roasted that day, and I can tell you, it was the juiciest, most tastiest pig I've ever had in my entire life.
You've got to quit meat after that. I mean,
yeah, I quit meat.
Once you eat the cheek meat and the eyeball.
Yeah,
Rachel and I
are like a year now, no meat.
So. Have you guys ever had Scrapple?
Oh, I love Scrapple. I love Scrapple. You ever have a brain scrambled with eggs for breakfast? Oh my God. It's just the juicy, delicious, fatty meat.
I grew up with Scrapple.
Oh, good Lord, guys. All right, so. All right, guys, well, we're going to dive deeper into the darker side. Dr. Jack Kevorkian.
Dr. Death.
Dr. Death, as we all know him. Probably the leading proponent for the right to death movement. And like you said earlier, John, probably should Herman, I should say. Sorry.
St. Jack, man.
St. Jack. Mm. We should, you know, give this guy a sainthood. Because, I mean, honestly, we've all been there. So this is the story of Dr. Jack Kevorkian.
Fuck yeah.
May 26th, 1928, Murad Kevorkian was born to Levon and Satanig Kevorkian in Pontiac, Michigan. Levon and Satanig were Armenian immigrants who came to America as refugees, escaping the genocide and massacres that took place against the Armenian people by the Turkish government shortly after World War I. Levon came first in 1912, and Satanig found her way to America in 1915, and they met in Pontiac and shortly after were married.
Hmm.
Murad Kevorkian was the second child of these, and a little later in elementary school, Murad earned the nickname Jack from his friends and teachers, and this is where we have Jack Kevorkian. Jack's parents were strict on religion and made sure their children were obedient Christians. Jack, as he got older, had a hard time reconciling what he believed were conflicting religious ideals, as a lot of intellects really do struggle with their religion in their youth, for sure.
Yeah, just be nice to everybody as long as they're Christian.
Right, and it doesn't make sense, exactly.
Treat people how you want to be treated.
He would often, in Sunday school, rail against any of the all-knowing God. If there was a God, a quote, if there was a God that could make his son walk on water, then why would he also have been able to prevent the Turkish slaughter of his entire extended family?
Mm-hmm.
Unquote. These are things that he would bring up in his Sunday school classes, like literally thinking about.
That's a hard answer.
It is a very hard answer, especially for the religious people who want to control these people, this population. Getting nowhere without getting any answers for these discrepancies and falsehoods, he stopped attending church and Sunday school altogether at the age of 12 years old because he couldn't get an answer from anybody. And, you know, from however early he was doing it to the age 12,
mm-hmm.
about these hard questions, and you're never going to get the answer. And that's it.
You're not. And you're not going to get it from church. That's for damn sure.
No, because they've got a reason why. Jack excelled in school and formed a passion for reading in academia, and he loved the arts. You would often find him drawing. He loved painting, and he absolutely loved piano.
Mm-hmm.
He loved jazz piano.
That's a good instrument.
He later on, in the second part, this is actually going to be a two-part series. Herman is going, I think, later on we'll let you know. He came out with a jazz album at one point. It was fucking tits. Along with being an excellent student came a very critical mind. Like, I mean, and that goes back to his Sunday school days, railing against the religion and questioning them.
Good students have a critical mind.
All good students have a critical mind.
And that was the problem that the Greeks had with Socrates. They said he corrupted the minds of the youth.
Yeah.
He told people to think.
Mm-hmm.
And
think for yourself. Thinking. Yeah.
The free thinkers are dangerous, John.
Yeah, free thinkers are dangerous.
He could never accept anything at face value and often found himself in a fierce debates with his classmates and teachers. And he often humiliated those who could not keep up with his wit and sharp debating skills. And his teachers and classmates obviously didn't really care for that too much.
Fuck yeah. You got the smart kid, like, challenging everything.
Exactly. In six,
it's like a little Sheldon Cooper.
Exactly. little Sheldon Coops.
Oh,
God. In sixth grade, he was promoted to junior high. And by high school, he had taught himself German and Japanese. He was a bit of a bookworm, to tell truth. I mean, you can't teach yourself by the age of, 14 years old to speak German, Japanese,
mm-hmm.
and English. And master probably all three of them.
Right.
I kind of knew one language at that age. Barely. I sort of knew English.
I could speak it, and I could barely write it.
I knew two things, American and English.
American and English. I like that.
He didn't care much. Because of this bookwormishness, he really had an issue with making friends and hardly ever had any. Literally had none. And he also thought...
We would have loved him, dude, in high school.
We would have absolutely loved him.
Oh, you can't make friends? We're your friends.
We're your friends, brah. He actually didn't care at all about romantic relationships. He basically thought that they were a diversion from his studies and could give two shits or a fuck about, getting down with some pretty lady or anything like that.
Getting down with some puss.
Two? Yeah. You said two?
What?
Huh?
Pay attention.
Hey.
And we wouldn't have to repeat ourselves.
No, I just think it's cool.
As I was saying, he didn't care much about romantic relationships. In 1945, at the age of 17 years old, Kevorkian graduated with honors from Pontiac High School. He was accepted into the University of Michigan College of Engineering, but halfway through his freshman year, he grew tired and bored with his studies and began a focus on botany and biology. Around that time, he set his sights on medical school, often taken 20 credit hours in a semester. That's a fuck ton of college.
That's a lot of credits.
That's a lot of college.
Ooh.
At a time. Often taking 20 credit hours in a semester in order to meet the 90-hour medical school requirements. So basically, he was trying to do this in a 4 to 5 year period.
Trucking through it.
Trucking.
Shit.
Space trucking.
Seriously. He might even, I don't know, in order to meet the 90-hour medical school requirements. He graduated in medicine in 1952 and began a specialty in pathology soon after. In 1953, however, the Korean War halted his studies. MASH. Right? Is that what you're doing? Yeah. Now, what is it? Suicide is painless?
Because suicide is painless.
By the way, that's the title of the song to the TV show MASH. Changes, if you didn't know that.
And I can take or leave it.
MASH.
He served 15 months as an army medical officer in the Korean War.
The game do you guys life have, do you have any, is hard to play.
Do you have any relatives that were in the Korean?
I'm gonna lose it anyway.
No.
Vietnam.
Vietnam. No. Your pap's father was in Vietnam.
My father was
right,
in
and then
Vietnam.
Your grandfather was World War II, right?
World War II.
Yeah, my grandfather on my dad's side was in. He was over in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any vets in your family?
Yeah. My uncle Ray was in Korea, and my wife's granddad was also in Korea.
Yeah.
Nice.
Forrest, anybody in your family ever? No?
No, nobody.
A bunch of liberals. Those crazy liberals breeding other liberals.
I thank them all for their service.
Yeah, absolutely.
That muddy, Jeep-filled
family. Absolutely. After the war, he began his residency at the University of Michigan Hospital, basically the same university that he graduated with or from. And it was here where Kevorkian began his fascination with death and the act of dying. He would photograph terminally ill patients' eyes in an attempt to pinpoint the exact moment of death. So he would photograph their eyes he would literally hover over these patients for days.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take photograph after photograph to pinpoint the time of their death. He believed that this would be useful so that doctors and nurses could distinguish death from either or like fainting, coma, or like some other type of thing that would send you into like a death, like, you know, at that time. So he was in hopes that they would give them a picture of what a human looked like, their eyes looked like at the time of death versus these other things.
Yeah, I mean, you can totally fall apart at many different times in your existence, and
right.
Death is very specific.
Mm-hmm. And what this would do is, so basically it would help the nurses and doctors in those times to distinguish between those and in order to learn when resuscitation was useless.
Now, that would also benefit the justice system.
At some point it would. And that's I think from the very beginning that he was thinking that way.
Yeah.
That I mean it would help the medical industry versus deterring, you know, the medical industry. It would help these guys in a lot of ways.
And with Kevorkian, it wasn't like a morbid fascination. It was more of like from a scientific standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does death look like? Nobody studies that. And we need people to do that. It's a big part of life. Anyone will tell you. Your grandmother will be like, "Death's a part of life."
Any Eastern culture will tell you that it is part of life and it is part of culture,
mm-hmm.
or Western, I should say, right? Or yeah. Are we Western?
We're Western. Yeah.
Eastern boys, Western girls. Western girl.
Oh, good. Yes, thanks.
Fucking
John.
Depeche Mode was great.
Later, Kevorkian told reporters, "But really, my number one reason was because it was interesting. And my second reason was because it was a taboo subject." So not only was he just absolutely fascinated by the moment of death, he was also like, yeah, because nobody fucking talks about it. We don't study this. We don't give any credit to this. This is just something afterwards. This is your path to the afterlife. He's like, this is a part of who we are as animals.
And my fourth reason was Wes Craven movies.
Oh, I love Wes Craven.
Kevorkian also proposed a short time later in a paper, actually, that death row inmates would be useful as subjects in medical experiments while they were still alive. His inspiration came from the ancient Greeks and Egyptians and the way they actually did experimentation.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Dr. Mengele, right?
Absolutely,
from the ancient Greek...
the ancient Greek Dr. Mengele?
The ancient Greek angel of death, yeah, that guy.
But you also have to think about where Kevorkian came from. He came back... He came from a very, very weird genocidal society. I mean, his parents were survivors of an actual genocide on people that certain governments actually don't still acknowledge today.
Yeah. Like ours.
Ours does not as well, as well as the Turkish government.
Specifically ours.
And
Turkey's our only real ally in the Middle East.
Yeah.
They love us. They love our ass. So they're like, cheeseburgers, America, football, okay.
Send your princess to our very elite private schools. Like we had. We had a Turkish prince in our school. He played soccer.
Did we?
Yes. He was in my intro to mass comm class, John.
Fair enough.
Yeah, he felt that experiments would cut down on cost and would produce a valuable glimpse into the anatomy of a criminal mind. In 1958, he advocated this view in a paper produced to the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is still a journal to this day.
It's not the slouchy. Journal. It is not slouchy.
Yeah, it's not slouchy.
There's
at
the
all.
New England Journal of Medicine. That's another good one.
Yeah. In a process that he called terminal human experimentation. Okay, this was a little bit Mengele of him, but it's also, these guys are also on death row and never going to get out of prison. And if they could do this with their, you know, if they were to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
So, I mean, so as a philosophy student, I studied many ethical questions. And one of them was, are we allowed to use the wisdom that we get from people like Mengele and people like Kevorkian and people that just kind of stepped outside of the norm and what is acceptable in society, but yet produced such knowledge that do you look at that? Do you read it? Do you grow from it? Or do you just shove it under the fucking rug?
Well, you look at like any society and including America and anything that we've done in regards to the advancement of science. They have literally taken from all of these people and have not even batted an eye.
Mm-hmm. It's all on the backs of terror. But like, what do you do?
Right.
What do you do with that knowledge? The knowledge is there. So do you grab it, or do you go? This was attained unethically.
Yeah. I mean, and that is one of the biggest questions. And this is like one of the questions that is basically the big focus of who Dr. Kevorkian becomes. So what it was is the convicts would volunteer. That's the word I was looking for. Sorry, volunteer. They would have the ability to volunteer for this experimentation. The volunteer for painless medical experiments that would begin while conscious, but would end in fatality as a result. Right, wow. Right. It's literally a medal. His experiments and strange proposals prompted his peers to give him the nickname.
Dr. Death.
But what he was also, and Dr. Death is very important because he becomes this known as this later on in the media, but he got this back in the 50s, this moniker. Also, what he advocated for during these experiments is any healthy ones who did volunteer for this, their organs would then be sent to banks who were looking for organ replacements.
Organ donations.
You know, and it was a big, and he pushed that, for many years, and until his death, he pushed this.
Wasn't it it was a poet in France, like Robespierre or somebody like that? And I don't Google it, but there was a poet who was being put to death in the French Revolution, and he decided that he wanted to do something good with the last few moments of his life. So he said to his friend, I am going to lose my head at the guillotine. And they created this system of blinks and facial expressions. And it was from him that we learned that when your head is cut off, you live for at least 13 seconds. Mm-hmm. Because he was blinking responses to his friend with his head severed from his fucking body.
Oh, my God.
That's crazy, right? Like, to think, like, It's crazy.
So somebody needs to study that. Like, at what point does living end and death begin? Right. And it's a part of everybody's life. Like, I'm going to die, you're going to die, everybody's going to die.
There's a Fringe episode on that.
We're all going to die.
Absolutely.
Where he actually, he used the image that was last imprinted on the person who's
the visual cortex.
Yeah. Of the eyes. Oh,
and a lot of good sci-fi has been written in that conceptual concept too. But we do not study death.
Nope.
We should.
We should know it. I mean, if we're going to know what life, if we want to know what life is, we should also figure out what death is.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, how do you know what good is without knowing what bad is?
Exactly.
So how do you know what it is to be alive if you don't know what it is to be dead?
Exactly.
Very true,
John. His controversial views garnished him with some minor media attention back then with that whole concoction of ideas, which in return resulted in the dismissal from the University of Michigan Medical Center. He applied and was accepted to finish his internship at Pontiac General Hospital instead, also in Pontiac, Michigan. It was here where he began another series of controversial experiments that were inspired by a Russian medical team who were transfusing blood from corpses into living patients.
What?
Interesting.
Yeah, and
I am Dr. Frankenstein.
Yes, exactly. And it is when he teamed up with his medical technologist, Neil Nicole, to simulate these same experiments. The results of these experiments were actually very successful.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew this from the Russian research.
Yeah.
And Kevorkian believed that this procedure could save countless lives on the battlefield, especially when blood banks were short or depleted completely on the front line. All you literally would have to do is a recently deceased human being. You know they're dead. There's no heartbeat, etc. There's no resuscitation. Drain that blood as soon as possible and get it to the guy right next to him as soon as possible. You've got a good chance that blood is going to be the same. And get it into this human being.
The elixir of life!
And again, it all depends on how we look at the body culturally after it's dead. Scientifically, he saw this as the best way to help those people who were just losing a limb or something and needed a blood transfusion.
Just keep the mortal coil bouncing down the street, you know? The body makes the brain survive.
Exactly.
And that's where we are.
But once the body and the brain are dead, that blood is still valuable.
No está en casa
according
de hoy.
To his research... And according to Kevorkian, actually literally had corpse blood, I think, put into his assistant's body and to his own body.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and he had this, so.
He's like walking Florida death metal.
Exactly.
I love this guy.
So Kevorkian pitched this idea to the Pentagon, figuring that it could save lives in the Vietnam conflict. But he was denied a federal grant and was unable to continue his research. Instead, this researched... fueled his reputation as an outsider, scared his colleagues, and eventually infected Kevorkian with hepatitis C.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god!
Oh, well,
you know, he got the Hep C, and later on in Herman's part, we're going to see how that actually affects the end of his life.
Oh, I see all this like blood transfusions and things. It makes me so queasy.
Oh, he's something so about creepy, it. But honestly, people need to do that work.
Absolutely.
Oh my god.
100% yes.
I'd pass out.
Amy donates platelets all the time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, if you were a platelet donor and you have the universal donor code, you fucking better, you know? Rachel is actually going to take us into the second part of this part one.
Hell yeah, Rachel.
Rachel, what do you got, babe?
Okay, so after receiving his specialty in 1960, as you stated, a lot of his colleagues were like, whoa, this dude's crazy.
Oh yeah.
Which eventually led him to be jobless.
His
life went down into a downward spiral up until the mid-1980s. By 1982, he was living on Social Security.
Oh, man.
And, eating canned food. Very minimalist lifestyle. But he was still doing his research, which is...
Oh, he didn't stop being who he was.
Oh, God, no. In 1985, he was finally published in the obscure Journal of National Medical Association. And then the following year, in 1986, he found out that doctors in the Netherlands were helping people die by lethal injection.
Wow.
And this is when Kevorkian's take on euthanasia really took off.
Wow.
So, just to interject here for a second, we were watching the HBO movie, You Don't Know Jack.
Yeah.
And literally the beginning audio of that movie is Jack talking to who? His
sister.
And what was his sister saying?
Oh, so they were talking about, like, it's kind of muffled, but you can hear him say, you remember the look on Ma's face?
And then
that
she's
desperation
all like,
in her eyes.
And she's all like, do you remember that pain? Mm-hmm. And like, I think that his mother's death also triggered his like,
oh my
extreme,
God.
Yeah. Sorry about that, but
no, it had to keep it going.
But that movie, by the way, guys, check that movie out. It's very
so
good.
Definitely.
Who was it?
Al Pacino.
Pacino playing Jack Vorkian. And then John Goodman's in it.
No way.
Susan Sarandon.
I'm going to have to watch this.
Yeah, it's on HBO.
Yeah.
Sure. Wow.
So I went to Starbucks earlier. I got myself an Al Pacino and a flat white. Fucking great.
I do have to say really quick that I love the folder.
Yeah, the Darker Side Forest. Notes folder.
Let it go.
It's Elsa.
Yeah, my notebook for the Darker Side podcast is
well,
an Elsa.
Don't
notebook.
Send your wife to Walmart and ask her, quote, pick me up a cool notebook.
I love your
I
Rachel.
Got you the coldest one there was.
Yeah, you can't get any more than frozen.
Cold never bothered me anymore.
All right.
So,
Rachel,
Kevorkian built this machine that was named the Thanatron. Which
great name.
Greek.
I love
for
it.
Instrument of Death.
Wow.
Yeah, he's such a metal album.
Hell yeah.
It cost him $45 to put it all together. It starts off with three bottles that are all connected to one IV line. So the IV line goes in, and then the saline is the first one to start just to get the drip going. Then a painkiller, which puts you to sleep. And then finally, a lethal dose of potassium chloride stops the heart.
Yes. It's just actually the most... It's literally the most, like, gentle way to die.
It really is.
And our judicial system doesn't even allow for this mercy when killing someone.
Oh, no, we are dank when we kill people. Mm. What the fuck is that shit we have with, like, it's not potassium chloride. It's
sodium pentothal?
Sodium pentothal is true serum.
Oh, yeah.
They also give you that in the hospital. You know, when you're like, I'm okay with surgery. I was thinking about having sex with my fucking dog. Like you just don't even know what you're saying. Yeah. That is sodium pentothal.
Fucking A, man.
But he designed this machine so that the patients could do it themselves. All they would have to do is just flip a little switch, or he set it up where you could just pull a string.
Especially those with like Parkinson's and stuff like that.
His ultimate goal was to have what he called obituariums, which would be a place for doctors to help and terminally ill patients help terminally ill patients and their lives.
Or in the Futurama world, a suicide booth.
Suicide booth.
Remember we met Bender there in season one, episode one?
The knife comes out, it's just twisted.
Oh, my Lanta. All right, so here comes the fun stuff. Janet Atkins was a 54-year-old Alzheimer's patient that had reached out to Dr. Kevorkian after hearing about this machine.
54 is way too young for Alzheimer's.
Wow.
But she's getting there advanced.
So she and her husband had decided she wanted to go before she couldn't remember who she was.
Oh, man.
But
Alzheimer's is a heartbreaking illness. And anybody who's suffering with that, anybody who has somebody living in their house that has Alzheimer's that they loved, I my heart goes out to you.
Yeah, for sure.
Mine too.
It's horrible. Illness.
It's proud.
I watched a video the other day of a kid, a guy, like an our age, probably like mid-30s to almost 40, having a conversation with his mother in like a Denny's. She's eating ice cream or something. And he's like, do you know who I am? She's like, no, I don't know who you are. You don't know who my dad is? No, I don't. And like then you see him in the car crying because he didn't realize it was going to be that fast. He thought he was going to have more time with his mom and shit.
It's sad, it's a brutal, man. Brutal disease.
It tears everybody apart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope I lose my body before I lose my fucking mind.
Yeah.
I really do.
Me too.
That was the curse my grandfather gave me. He said to me, he's like, is it better to lose your mind or your body?
Hmm.
And I can't, those words haunt me. It was the last thing he said to me while he was alive. And I can't.
I think you've told me that you want me to just cut you off
yep.
if you lose your mind.
Yep.
You can't remember your kids or your loved ones. Cut me away. Yep. I'm like, all right, I'll pull that trigger. If that's what my baby wants, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Want my baby happy wife, happy life.
Exactly.
Yep. Happy afterlife. Happy afterlife.
Knowing me, it'll be 104, and I'm the 2 seconds from that doorstep myself.
You're going to outlive us all, you fucking health nut.
Yeah.
So in a public park, in his Volkswagen van, Kevorkian attached the IV to Janet. She pulled the plug and she ceased to live 5 minutes later.
Now, when I actually read this in the research, Volkswagen, I had this picture in my brain of what this looked like, yeah, right? And then we saw the movie,
yeah,
and I saw it as like, wow, they probably portrayed it more realistically in the movie yeah, than I had. I had this whole like mini bus, like the short bus, and like just all these wires and everything, like Dr. Frankenstein experiments going on. And it was literally just that flat part in the back of a VW bus.
Oh man, it that's all so it was. Pot in those.
Yeah, that was all it was, dude. And it was like, shit, it was so more just real in the movie when I saw it. It was like, that's probably the best portrayal of actually how it happened in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where was this taken? In Michigan?
Yep.
In Michigan.
I'm going to have to watch this now.
It's a really good film, dude.
So here comes where the legal fun begins. So obviously, the state of Michigan filed charges against Dr. Kevorkian.
Of course.
But it was dismissed because apparently in the state of Michigan, they are very indecisive. They have a very indecisive stance on assisted suicide.
They had no legal legislation against it at all, because honestly they've never had to have any at this point. And it was never a question because of how the legislation was written prior.
Mm-hmm.
He tested all of the boundaries.
Yes, he did.
It's like when you break that rule in school and they were like, I didn't even know I needed a rule for this.
Right, right.
That was like my whole childhood. I was like, wait, nobody ever did this?
Right.
So in 1991, a Michigan judge ordered by injunction that Kevorkian be barred from the use of the suicide machine. So they can't arrest him for killing people, but at least they can stop him from using the machine he built to do it.
Mr. Kevorkian, I'm sorry. I just we've had a ruling, and you can't use the suicide box anymore. I apologize. I know you did a lot of good work. Mm-hmm. You've really worked hard on the suicide machine, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I was really impressed with your metal work. The tubing is amazing.
Use a Kinex.
Yes, and Legos. I didn't think you could use Kinex Legos in an erector set to kill somebody in such a peaceful way. And
I did start my college career as an engineering student. So
but we're all really impressed with your work. I mean, I gotta say, it is lovely, and I think if it was a toaster, I think White's Westinghouse would really just they would run and they would buy that and they would sell it to everybody. It'd be in everyone's house if it was a vacuum cleaner.
You guys are awesome.
But because it's assisted suicide machine, because it makes people who were formerly alive, because they were alive and then they used your toaster oven with all the tubes and whatnot, they became
deceased.
Dead. Yes, that's the word. We were very uncomfortable with that. I think, but good work, sir. You can't use it anymore.
So eventually, his medical license was revoked.
Well, I mean, with the medical revocation license of that, they could take away any of his ability to get some of these.
Yeah, he can't. Yeah. He couldn't obtain any of these drugs anymore. So they're trying to do it. But good old Kevorkian comes back with a new machine called the Mercitron.
Hey, Tron is machine in Latin.
Yeah, yeah.
So
the mercy,
the machine of mercy.
The mercy machine.
I call my son Eltron.
Yeah. Eltron.
The Elliot machine.
Yeah.
Mercitron.
The machine, man.
The old Mercitron.
I just can't get over it.
The Mercitron was a device that delivered carbon monoxide through a gas mask.
Which is actually far more pleasant way to go.
Yeah.
Than the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You literally don't have any, you don't have, you
you sleep.
CO2 dies. It makes you sleep and then you die.
That's it.
It is actually the most peaceful way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
So when I worked at the pet store, we had a we had a kid that dropped like this entire fish tank full of mice. So they all were in the walls, and next to us was a hot yoga studio. So like they were really bent out of shape by the fact that there's hot yoga running around and it just mice pissing everywhere.
Oh my god.
We got all these little glue traps, right? And one day I came to work and there was 7 mice stuck to a glue trap. They're all squeaking, wee, 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 and they're just dying. So we got a fish delivery, and in the fish food is shipped with dry ice.
Yep.
So I took a little page out of Dr. Kevorkian's book, and I said to myself, what's going to make these mice go to sleep in such a peaceful way? So I grabbed the dry ice and a 10-gallon fish tank, and I put the 10-gallon, I put a little bowl of water out there for the little mice, and I dropped a little dry ice in it, put the 10-gallon fish tank over the top of it, and they all went to sleep.
Within minutes, so dude. Peaceful. Within seconds.
So peaceful.
And you know what, dude? That's probably the most humane thing that you could have done.
Yep. Yeah.
For them in that situation. And God bless you, dude. I've heard this story 100 times, but it never hurt me or felt... I've never felt it in my chest the way I felt it right now, dude.
I felt it.
Everybody thought I was really weird and dark, and I'm like, no. I mean, the mice were going to die anyway. They're on a poison sticky glue trap.
It's going to take seconds versus days at this point.
I felt it, Herman.
Good for you, man. All right, Rachel, back to Kevorkian.
They did call me Adolf Herman at work for a little while.
Yeah, I call you like Saint Herman.
My God.
So, in about 1992, Michigan legislature passed a bill.
The judicial system
that outlawed assisted suicide.
Of course, they did.
Which caused Dr. Kevorkian to be jailed twice.
It's the first one, isn't it? I mean, that's
His first one.
Yeah.
Yes.
So his lawyer Jeffrey Feiger. Yep.
He was all about jumping on Kevorkian.
I bet.
Like, he was like, I'm going to get my name out there. This guy's going to make me tons of money.
Yep.
Fuck yeah.
And he took the case for free. Yep. And he did all the publicity and everything for Kevorkian.
Yep. He bailed him out.
Multiple times.
So his lawyer stated that a person cannot be guilty if medication was given to relieve pain and suffering.
Boom.
Which it's true.
And it's not written in the Michigan or United States Constitution that way.
Mm-hmm. So case closed, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Darker Side podcast.
So he was prosecuted 4 times, acquitted of 3, and there was a mistrial in the 4th before his final.
Because everyone's confused, right? Like, oh, you're killing people, but...
He never actually literally once killed anybody.
No, he just... Here's the button. Your choice.
Yep.
And then, so basically that's where we're at with that story, guys. With the Darker Side, diving deeper into... To Jack Kevorkian, Dr. Death. Herman is going to dive deeper into the second half of Dr. Kevorkian next week. And John, what I think you're going to hit on is when he actually gets convicted.
He gets fucked by the government.
Oh, he totally does, dude.
Oh, I bet.
And then
fucked so
and John
hard.
We'll finish out the rest of the story next week on the Darker Side podcast.
Darker Side.
Fuck yeah.
Right now we are going to get into Getting Lost in the Forest. Forrest, what do you got for us today, buddy?
Okay, this is by Pantheos.com, May 23rd, 2018.
I love it. It's Pantheos. It's one of my favorite.
Really?
Yeah. I know. I believe it's Latin for everything.
Every god.
Every god. Yeah. Yes. Pan is everything, and Theos is
religion.
Like pentathic acid is the acid in everything. So everyone's like, oh, you need vitamin B5. It's like, it's fucking in everything. I could eat cardboard that has vitamin B5 in it.
I'm so sorry.
I went in a weird spot with that.
No, that's all right. You know. Weird's good.
Take your vitamins, bitches.
Fuck yeah. So, Oregon principal fired after making LGBTQ+ students read the Bible as punishment.
Okay. Which chapter?
Illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they make him read my favorite piece? Yeah. It's from the Corinthians thing that everybody likes to read.
Fuck the Corinthians, dude.
No, this is great.
Love is patient.
This is great. It's the same piece of that, but at the end of that it says, hope ends in fruition, faith ends in sight. Mm. But charity, it was never love, but charity is forever. It was never fucking love. It was always charity. And you know what's cool about that? The Bible tells you not to believe in the fucking Bible. Boom. Ninth Corinthians, read it.
What do you got? What does the article say here?
According to the ACLU of Oregon, that's a pretty credible place.
I mean, it's wet, but they work hard.
Yeah.
They wear a lot of flannel.
They advocate also for what's going on with my college with the for-profit industry.
Oh, yeah, you have a... Yeah. Totally into that.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I can't talk about it. They told one of our clients she was going to hell for being gay, subjected LGBTQ students to harsher discipline than their straight peers, and equated homosexuality with bestiality. Mm-hmm. You know, that brings me back to Rick Santorum running for president.
Yeah.
And then he got his Urban Dictionary definition, which I advise everyone to look up.
Yeah.
Santorum. It's really disgusting to find out, but it's really funny.
Look up Swedish fishing somebody, too. That's pretty gross. Swedish fish your ass.
I can't imagine.
We also learned, guys, that both LGBTQ students and straight students have been forced to write Bible passages as a punishment.
Two of the students at North Bend High School, seniors Liv Funk and Haley Smith, brought these problems to the attention of a friendly counselor. That, in turn, led to help from Willamette Law School's legal clinic, which later brought the case to the Oregon Department of Education. The DOE sent a letter to District Superintendent Bill Yester back in March detailing their findings and calling for reform within the district, which didn't materialize. I mean, come on, it took this long, really?
It really did, yeah.
I don't care who you are or what grade you're in. I would say no to that. If I'm going to a public school that is funded by the state, I would say no to that myself and say fuck you and, I don't know, punish me some other way. I don't know, shove something up my ass. I don't fucking know.
John sent me dirty text while you're reading this, dude.
What?
This asshole, he's sending me dirty text.
Oh, my God. Sexting.
No dick pics or anything.
No sexting during the podcast.
Really inappropriate, making me giggle.
Now there are real consequences for that in action. North Bend High School principal Bill Lucero and school resource officer Jason Griggs are being removed from their jobs in the district settlement with American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon.
Hmm.
Yep, and... I would go further into the story, but I'm going to let everyone else, read it on their own.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so, going into the rant, even though the U.S. Supreme Court has long made it clear that the Constitution prohibits public school sponsored prayer or religious indoctrination, although it still happens in public schools to this day, violations remain rampant in many parts of the country. And this is the latest in a long line of unconstitutional religious-based punishment and discrimination. It is 2018, people. In no way should anyone's religious views dictate the way some poor LGBTQ student anywhere in this nation be treated or mistreated. Because of this disgusting, hate-filled religious bigotry, these kids had to suffer an unimaginable amount of torture. Psychological torture.
Yeah. Right? It's horrible.
It's fucking ridiculous. It brings me back to my high school days. To be told what you do or who you are is akin to bestiality is unacceptable in today's world as it's been throughout history for the fucking matter. Schools should be a safe place for kids to be taught and nurtured, and the students should be able to be who they are and not fear that some religious nutbag principal or school resource officer, goes back to my high school in Grafton, Massachusetts, should be able to be who they are and not fear that some religious nutbag principal is going to get in the way, you know, with their religious views. Christians really like to make it a point to keep the Christ in Christmas. But when it comes to following the peace-filled, loving, and tolerant teachings of their Christ,
they'll be the first to throw him out the window.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, yeah. Keep the Christ at Christmas, but fuck him every other day of the year.
Yep.
He gets one day.
Yeah. I'm really. You know,
anything that some bitch's got to tell us, I don't care. I hate them other peoples.
These are the same people that crucified Jesus. Let's not make a thing about this. I'm like, I love that you say be nice to each other.
I don't even get irritated anymore when I see like Keep the Christ and Christmas on people's cars.
Oh, you know what? It makes me want to fucking puke.
I just
seriously that little manger. Jesus was born when the fucking cattle were laying down in the grass.
The
man.
Cattle were lowing in March. Jesus was born on my birthday.
Yeah, he was born closer to fucking Easter than he was goddamn Christmas.
And keep in mind,
that's a middle finger, everybody.
It's also pagan.
It's also very pagan. It was a Roman.
Hell yeah.
It was a Roman advancement to take over a pagan holiday so that they could equate themselves. They could take over the region and still give them their holiday.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Happy Saturnalia, everyone.
Saturnalia, everybody.
Hail Satan. Hail fucking Satan, man. And, you know, it just makes me laugh because, you know, I see this whole like war on Christmas bullshit start like the day after Halloween, and I'm getting so fucking sick of it. Like,
what about the fucking war on Halloween?
The war on Halloween.
Yeah, dude. You know, all Hallows Eve, man. When you know, we gotta keep the door open for our dead ones. You know,
I love Halloween. I'm pretty sure everyone loves Halloween. Going forward, I would call them fucking hypocrites.
Absolutely.
They're fucking hypocrites. I'm so sick and tired of seeing all these hypocrites running our country or the people who vote for the people who run our country. And I just feel like we got to keep our religion out of our lives. You know, it's being passed in legislation in the South. And it's getting really fucking
absolutely, brother,
ridiculous.
I mean, honestly, like you said, keep your religion out of my life.
Yep.
I mean, I don't care. We can all get along. We can all accept each other, or we can accept each other, but let's be peaceful. And let's be decent.
Yep.
But keep your religion out of my life, and I will do the same with yours.
This country was founded on that. Like, literally, people were rejects from their land.
No,
They came here for religious freedom, and that religious freedom turned into persecution.
Right.
Yep.
And even our forefathers had debates about it. Literally, and I mean, some of the Federalist Papers, etc., all these things about,
love the Federalist Papers. Yeah.
With the separation of church and state.
DOI, which, don't forget the DOI.
The separation of church and state was one of the most hottest contested debates that we had while forming this nation.
And
we did give a literal separation in our Constitution.
We did.
And there should always be that separation.
And I just think it's funny that the people who support the party who are forcing these things in our country, I feel like that people need to recognize that this is a big problem.
It's a huge problem, dude. Huge problem.
You know, and people, maybe they do, and they just think, you know, I don't want to talk about it, whatever, but I don't hear people talking about it, you know. You know, so I just want to know what you guys think. Let us know. Happy Pride Month, everybody, and peace and love.
Peace and love.
Oh, hell
everybody.
Yeah.
Peace and love. Happy Pride Month, everybody.
Hell
Be
yeah.
Be proud of who you are.
Please
All right,
do.
Guys. Well, that was... the segment, Getting Lost in the Forest.
Fuck
Thank
yeah.
you, Forest. Fucking high fives all around, everybody.
High fives. Hell yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we are going to get into the Darkest Side Metal Showcase. This week, the band that we are going to showcase is a band called Plea of Insanity.
Plea of Insanity.
Fuck yeah. Plea of Insanity is a three-piece death metal band based out of Southbridge, Massachusetts.
Fuck yeah.
The band originally started as a studio project between guitarist, vocalist Joe Hader and drummer Pete Spiel. After recording their first title debut album, guitarist Tyler Burden and bassist Stevie Blunder were added to begin gigging throughout New England. Tyler Burden eventually left to pursue his own music, and the band has since continued as a three-piece. I love that they gave that, like, interesting little bit of their history that doesn't necessarily need to be there, but they still kept it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. It's part of who the band was and became. Great.
Nice.
Plea of Insanity is a death metal band at its core, but also draws inspiration from grindcore and black metal to form a unique sound. The band is currently in the process of writing its second album. Their song that we will showcase today is called Walking Nightmare. from their debut album, and will also be featured on a Death in New England, an online compilation of New England death metal bands, in which is being released by Metal Cage, and it's set for release in July.
Fuck yeah.
Here is Plea of Insanity with Walking Nightmare on the Darker Side Music Showcase Metal Edition.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that was Plea of Insanity with Walking Nightmare on the Darker Side Music Showcase Metal Edition. I have to say, I fucking love this band. The drummer of this band, Pete, I won't give his real last name, is related to a fellow who was not on the last episode of the podcast, who I've known since he was literally 10 years old.
Wow.
And he was in my first legitimate band. He was the drummer, along with the person who was on our last episode.
Shit, yeah.
And Mr. Herman over here, we had a band called, originally it was what, Big Fat Guy?
Big Fat Guy. Awesome.
BFG, as in the Big Friendly Giant, but Big Fat Guy, which I didn't even make that connection until they made that BFG movie, and later turned to 32 Hood, which we had some, you know, college acclaim.
Dude, I want to listen to you guys.
Limited notoriety.
We opened up for area. Run
DMC and G11 Special.
Yeah,
as well.
We won a Battle of the Bands and we're able to. So PT Pants, who I like to call, has been one of my favorite drummers of all time. And I literally love this band. Plea of Insanity is an amazing death metal band, if you want to call them that. They are far more versatile in the world of metal, as you could say, in this song. It really, really does showcase the talent of that band.
Oh, and just tears holes in the fucking sky.
My band, Frenemy, has actually played. We played a show. Plea of Insanity played with us back in, I think it was February of this year, and it was a fucking amazing show. And if you ever get a chance to go see Plea of Insanity, honestly, check them out on Facebook, and they have their shows all the time. Those guys play a lot out where, out in eastern Massachusetts, and do a great job. I love Plea of Insanity. Rachel, what do you got to say about that fucking sweet ass metal riffage?
Well, I too am familiar with a few of the band members, and it's nice to hear them express themselves so creatively.
Well, because you know how peaceful and loving these other guys are, and then you hear their music, and you're like, God damn.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a balance.
That's why I'm in a metal rock band. Correct. Because that is my therapy.
You
get to scream into a microphone, you know, for 3 hours a week, and the rest of the week is peaceful.
Yeah.
You know? Forrest, you dug this, didn't you?
I fucking love this song. It's like what I breathe for. It's awesome. I'm going to jam to it in my car on the way home.
Sweet. And when he says jam, he means...
Yeah, I'm going to listen to it.
Like peanut butter jam and jelly.
I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to get a massive boner and listen to it.
No, but it's funny, Forrest. You know, you coming from the LGBT community, I literally almost like, oh, trap music or... And because of your age, I'm like hip-hop, etc.
I like everything.
I know, and I like what blows my mind is that you like System of a Down, and you like even darker metal.
I love System of a Down. You like heavy metal,
you like death metal, you like black metal.
Oh my God, I'm just getting into Wage War, and I fucking love that band.
Yeah, I would, I haven't heard them, and I would definitely love to check them out.
Oh my God.
Herman, H-E-R-R-M-A-N-N, John Herman. Branding himself as Herman. What do you got to say about Plea of Insanity?
I did not register the trademark. Oh, dude, please. I once rode a motorcycle over a mountain in New Hampshire to see this band. They fucking tear it apart, yeah, man.
I bet.
Gnarly, gnarly fucking tasty riffs. Tasty.
I tear it apart.
You would. You would, Forrest. I would, too.
I want to ride that band like a Harley on a bad piece of road.
Plea of Insanity, thank you very much for reaching out to us. And, guys, if you want to reach out to them, seriously, I think you can find them on Bandcamp. I think you can find them on the Facebook. And they'd be willing to, sell you a copy of their CD, I'm sure. Just reach out to them. This is some amazing music.
You got a little cash in pocket, they'll play a little party in your backyard.
For a good going rate. I'm not gonna say cheap. But I'm sure they would definitely work with you if you wanted to have them play in your metal, party.
Fucking Satan's barbecue.
I thought you were saying mouth party.
Some pork on the grill and some fucking Plea of Insanity on the mic.
Just smoke a whole goat. Fucking Plea of Insanity.
Thank you guys for reaching out to us, and we are more than pleased to showcase you on the Darker Side Music Show.
Much love.
Thank you. Love you guys.
All right, guys. Well, that was the Darker Side Podcast, episode 16.
Fuck yeah.
Thank you, guys. I am David Pottle. You can find me on Facebook at David Pottle. And you can find my band Frenemy at Frenemy Providence on Facebook and all the wonderful social media bullshits. Rachel is unavailable at the end of this episode to thank you to a Wunderkid or a Eltron, as I like to call him.
And no one's in Casa de Hoy.
The Elliot Machine.
Elliot Machine.
You can find Rachel at DRP49532, I think, at on the Instagrams. No, no. Yeah, Insta. No, not Instagrams. I think it might be the Instagrams.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Graham. Graham, my lady at that.
Just Graham. Graham's Instagram, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
At Instagram. Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay, David. Okay.
Forrest, what do you got, buddy?
You can find me on Forrest Films on Facebook, YouTube, and all that good stuff. You know, our Darker Side podcast is on Podbean. We're on SoundCloud, technically. We're on Patreon. We're on
Patreon.
We're on, you know, all that good shit. We're on, what other ones there are? There's, like, iTunes, Android Music.
Yeah, Google Play.
Google Play.
Yeah, man.
And we would really love you guys to send us stuff.
Come play with us.
Please, just rate us.
Please.
That would be so beautiful.
It's so early in our career. Just love us.
We love
Harmon, what do you got, buddy?
Love us, love us, love us so much. You just love us. Love us as we love you. We're like Jesus, and we love you so much.
Hell yeah.
You can find me at Herman Brau, HERRMANNBREU. That's the German word for brew. At Instagram.com. Send me pictures of shit that you just love to send pictures of. I don't give a fuck if it's your pink fridge. Send a picture of it. I love you so much. You're so fucking.
Like that pink lady, so pink everything.
You're just so, I see every one of you are so fucking good.
I just
wanted to lean in on your pillow and just talk in your ear.
This
just
is like, such a soothing like, session right now.
Oh my god, your hair smells so good. Just smells so good.
So, are we talking about how John will read anything for Patreon?
I will read anything for Patreon. You pay, I play.
We have a story coming up, guys, for Patreon.
Absolutely, guys. This has been.
The Darker Side, Darker Side Podcast.
Hey guys, this is Forrest with the Darker Side Podcast. I just thought, because it is Pride Month, to surprise you guys with just a quick little clip as an outro. Instead of our normal creepy alienscape, I'm going to include a little bit of a nice Pride ending, prideful ending. Alright, thanks guys. Love you all.
Every day just feels like a war. And I walk around so mad at the world, but I'm really just fighting with myself. I don't want to fight anymore. I'm just too tired. Like a small boat, I have to just be me. On the ocean,
sending big waves. I'm gay!
I'm gay, and... Austin is too.
And I am gay.
I'm gay. I'm gay. So
why was it necessary for you to come out, tell the public? Why was it necessary for the character to do so?
Because it's okay. Because it is okay.